If to God you have been true, fair and bright the home in glory, your enraptured soul will view. Hold them to God's unchanging hand.
Outline that would like one, I hope, if you'd like to follow along. I began this study on Ecclesiastes. I thought I was just going to kind of go through the gist of it, just make it easy, but I kind of got caught up in doing it really a verse by verse, and now I'm already on lesson number 10, and we're only still on chapter 7, so we'll try to pick it up a little bit, but when I give you the notes, I strive to give you enough information that it will serve even as a personal study if you'd like to do that. And also outline the chapter, or at least the section of text we're looking at, to hopefully make it more understandable. So in this section, Ecclesiastes 7, beginning of verse 11, titled it Putting Wisdom into Practice, and I list about seven ways or seven areas to put wisdom into practice in these verses. So by way of introduction, I would need to say, if we let it, wisdom can be a practical and powerful influence in our life. Wisdom. It may not solve all of our problems or smooth out all of our rough roads, but it can give us a perspective, meaning a right way to look at things that happen in our life. And that's what Solomon is presenting here. So seven areas, and I'm not going to read the whole chapter this time first, but just read as each section comes up. So number one, in verses 11 and 12, Solomon says, wisdom is good with an inheritance and profitable for those who see the sun. In other words, those who live under the sun. That's us. For wisdom is a defense, as money is a defense. But the excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it. So I put in your notes, wisdom plus wealth is a double blessing. But it'd be a triple blessing if you add God. More blessings. By wisdom, by definition, it's applied knowledge. If you have wisdom, it's sensible. You're choosing rightly. It's discernment. It's wisdom. In this text, Solomon says, it's good with an inheritance. So Solomon is now speaking to those with treasure or wealth. And then he says that wisdom and that inheritance is profitable. That's right. In other words, if you have wisdom and now you have the inheritance, it provides family needs, it pays debts, it gives us the ability to be rich in good works, provides retirement, it's ours to enjoy, and the list goes on. You can think of things yourself. I just put some list of scriptures for that wealth to be enjoyed. Sometimes brethren think, I shouldn't have or be so blessed with treasure. But in chapter 2, verse 24, Solomon said, nothing is better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good from his labor. Right. He says, this also I saw from the hand of the Lord. In chapter 3, verse 13, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy good of all his labor. It's a gift of God. Chapter 5, verse 18, here's what I've seen. It's good and fitting for one to eat and drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life, which God gives him, for it's his heritage. And even in this chapter, in verse 14, it says, in the day of prosperity, be joyful. So there, Solomon is saying, yes, in this life under the sun, if we are blessed with an inheritance or wealth or treasure, With wisdom, it's good, profitable. Verse 12, he says, wisdom is a defense, as money is a defense. So wisdom will give us the perspective on the right use of wealth. The last phrase of verse 12, the excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it. Proverbs 8, verse 35 says, whoever finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. If you find life, that which is good, you find favor from the Lord. So in these opening verses of our text tonight, wisdom, inheritance, it's profitable for us under the sun. But then he also says, the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord, that's wisdom that's eternal and gives life. Remember the phrase that I mentioned a couple of times in John 10, verse 10, where Jesus said, I came that you might have life and have it more abundantly. And I'm sure someone in his audience may say, what do you mean you came to have life? I have life. I'm living. Can you breathe? But Jesus says, I'm going to give you life more abundantly. Ah, something added to life under the sun. So put wisdom into practice in that. It's good with inheritance. Second, you put wisdom into practice in verse 13. Consider the work of God. Put that into practice. For who can make straight what he, meaning God, has made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful. But in the day of adversity, consider. Surely God has appointed the one as well as the other, so that man can find out nothing that will come after him. So now he's speaking about the providence of God. Mentions in the day of prosperity. You know, it's easy to me to, at least I think it is, to be thankful to God and be joyful in good times. That's easy. But are we as quick to be thankful for what we've learned in the crooked places? The things we can't straighten out. Things I don't understand. And so he not only mentions the day of adversity, the day of prosperity, but the day of adversity. So he's now consider that section. So I need to look at God with wonder, admiration, and silently wait sometimes for the result of God's work. Sometimes patience. And then the contrasts of life are deliberately allowed by God so that we should ultimately develop a trust and a dependence on God. So there's a day of prosperity, a day of adversity. Consider the works of God. I put my trust and my dependence on Him. He says the next phrase, surely God has appointed one as well as the other. That's right. When Job lost everything, put this in your notes, his wife asked him to curse God. And Job responded in Job 2, verse 10. Says, you speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God? And shall we not accept adversity? In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. I put an added reference just in Psalm 73, the first 17 verses. It's the Psalm of Asaph. And Asaph begins in these opening verses of Psalm 73. Why do the wicked prosper? And Asaph has this communication back with God. He's almost arguing or wants to discuss with God. Here, God, I'm on your side and I'm in dire straits. Until you get to verse 17. And then he says, until I went into the sanctuary of God, then understood I their end. Oh. See, God doesn't always adjust the balances in our lifetime. I think wisdom and perspective on providence is knowing what you know and know what you don't know. He says, man, the last phrase, man can find out nothing that will come after him. I just mentioned two songs in your notes. Dennis led one of the songs. God, no, the dread not the things are afraid, but that would fit the same section. You know, God holds the future in his hands. things I don't know. In 463, I know who holds tomorrow. It's not me. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So Solomon says, put wisdom into practice in that. Consider the work of God. Number three is in verses 15 through 18. It says, I have seen everything in my days of vanity. I've seen everything. And then he gives the illustration. There's a just man who perishes in his righteousness. And there's a wicked man who prolongs his life in his wickedness. So don't be overly righteous. That's a hard one to understand. Nor be overly wise. Why should you destroy yourself? Don't be overly wicked, nor be foolish. Why should you die before your time? Probably mean don't participate in vices that will shorten your life. Don't abuse things that will shorten your life. Why should you die before your time? He said, it's good that you grasp this, and also not remove your hand from the other. For he who fears God will escape them all. All right, let's go back. You ever heard people say, you know, life's a puzzle? Let's say, I just can't figure this life out. Or they might say, life's not fair. And Solomon presents that right here. He says, there's a just man and a wicked man, and they are reversed rewards. We think the righteous man should have the life prolonged, the wicked man should shorten his life, but Solomon said, no, they're reversed. And Solomon says later in Ecclesiastes 11, verse 5, as you do not know what the way of what is the way of the wind, yeah, I don't know, or how bones grow in the womb of her who is with child, so you do not know the works of God who makes everything. Some things we just don't know. Why does the wicked man prosper and the righteous man perish, Tucson? We don't and we can't know the works of God. And if we could, I wouldn't be in awe of God. If I had all that understanding. If rewards were reversed now, I know that the puzzle will be solved one day when God does balance the scales of justice. So I'm still in wonder, why do the wicked prosper and the righteous suffer? Verses 16 and 17 are misunderstood by many. Make a wrong conclusion. There's no need. Or those that misunderstand, they'll say, you know, there's no need for extremes. It's because of these verses right here, someone will say, there's no need to be overly righteous. They say, let's find the middle ground. Let's just live a little, because nobody's perfect, and the phrases go on. But some point in the phrase is that we're not to go around flaunting our righteousness. Don't be overly righteous. Or don't be overly humble, in a sense. We're to be righteous, but not in a self-promoting way. In other words, don't be the overly Pharisee that Jesus mentions in Matthew 23. That's overly righteous. Don't be the one Pharisee who prays in the temple in Luke 18, 11. God, I thank you that I'm not like other men. And then the man that says, I thank you I'm not like other men, talks about those who are overly wicked. Those over there, the extortioners and unjust. Solomon is not warning us about being too righteous. It's about righteous rhetoric. Rhetoric that's not backed up by deeds. The Pharisees, Jesus said in Matthew 23 and verse 3, they say, but do not. So they talk a good fight. We want to avoid being lukewarm. But some people say, though these verses are teaching that find that middle ground, be lukewarm. But Jesus said, in Revelation 3, verse 16, so then, because you're lukewarm, neither hot nor cold, I'll vomit you out of my mouth. I can understand that. I want to avoid the conceit, the self-righteousness, the smug in Christianity, the pride-filled. I don't want to be overly, meaning I don't want to be like a Pharisee. The show without the tell. And Solomon said in verse 18, grasp this. So he's saying, don't get caught up in self-righteousness or false humility. Rather, walk in the fear of God is his lesson in these verses. So put wisdom into practice. Number four, in verses 19 and 20, wisdom strengthens the wise. Ah, yes. More than 10 rulers of the city. For there's not a just man on earth who does good and does not sin. That's an easy one to understand. In verse 9, verse 10 again, Solomon said, the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. That's right. So that's always that foundational stance we want to have. I'm going to fear God more than 10 rulers of a city. Remember the Old Testament story, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were also known as Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. But their names were changed when they went to Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they were threatened with death by fire. So they said to Nebuchadnezzar, almost what Solomon is saying here, wait a minute, wisdom gives strength more than 10 rulers of a city. So these three boys, they said to Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel 3:17, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. And he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you set up. So they said to Nebuchadnezzar, king, we're not going to bend our faith. We're not going to bow down to your idol, and we will not burn. They wouldn't bend, they wouldn't bow, they wouldn't burn. 3 points. So now Solomon says, your wisdom strengthens the wise. And there's not a just man on earth. You know, at the completion of the temple and its dedication, Solomon said a prayer. It's a lengthy prayer in 1 Kings chapter 8. But part of that prayer in verse 46, Solomon said, when they sin against you, for there is no one who does not sin, and you become angry with them. Oh, so even Solomon recognized, there's not a just man who does not sin. So he says, who does good and does not sin. So the wise person will keep doing good, but he's going to trust the gracious goodness of God. Of course, we know Romans 3, verse 10, there's none righteous. No, not one. Romans 3, verse 23, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Yeah. There's not a just man who does good that doesn't sin. In 1 John 1, verse 8, if we say that we have no sin, we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. Yeah. So we know that. So put wisdom into practice and have it strengthen you. Number 5. Verses 21. Also, do not take to heart everything people say. Oh, man. Don't take to heart everything people say. You know, because they're probably just repeating what they've heard other people say about you. So don't take it to heart. He says, lest you hear your servant cursing you. For many times also your own heart has known that even you have cursed others. Well, let's take the first part first. You know, the court of public opinion is always in session. Don't take to heart everything people say about you. You know, I don't remember being really cursed, but you know, you get criticized. And you can't take to heart everything that people criticize you over. I think every bit of criticism has a spark of truth in it. And whether you see it or not, or even whether you agree with it or not, if someone makes a criticism, there had to be a reason for that, something they've observed or heard. So there might be a spark of truth, even though that's not true. And there's a neighbor lady, lives up the street from us. She has a little sports car, just a two-seater. She drives it like it's a go-kart. I mean, she leaves her house, comes down the street, and is a dead end, and she just goes right on around the corner, just happy. And so one time she pulled up when I was out in the front yard, and she kind of startled me a little bit, and I turned around and says, "Oh, hi, Karen." She says, "I didn't know it was you. You were driving too slow." And we laughed a little bit. And says, "Usually, when she's coming." So about a week later, out in the front yard again, she came by and stopped. "Brian, I've been thinking about what you said." "Uh-oh, what did I say?" "I don't know what I said." She said, and then she reminded me what I said. She said, I'm going to slow down a little bit. Well, it lasted maybe a month. Last week, she turned on. But I said kind of in jest. She thought about it. A criticism. "I've been thinking about what you said." So she probably thought, "I have been driving like a race car driver." When I was reaching, one who writes a bulletin, they get a lot of criticism. Well, you probably don't. Yeah, I mean, criticized. No. Bulletin's always right. If it's in the bulletin, it might.
You made a mistake in years.
So then you come to the other side. "For many times also your own heart has known that even you have criticized or cursed others," is the text. So now I put in your notes, Solomon, the preacher, that's what he says in Ecclesiastes 1 verse 1. The preacher just stopped preaching and gone into meddling. But I'm supposed to take this point personally. That's right. Remember the phrase we learned as children? Every time you point a finger at someone else, you have three pointing back at you. And then the thumb's pointing up to God. Yeah. We all have our likes and our dislikes, our preferences, our opinions. Opinions are like belly buttons. Everybody has one. So Solomon's just saying, put wisdom into practice. Put wisdom into practice. Number 6, you need to press on. Verse 23. "All this I have proved by wisdom." What have you proved, Solomon? "I said, I will be wise, but it was far from me. As for that which is far off and exceedingly deep, who can find out? I applied my heart to know, to search, and seek out wisdom and the reason of things, to know the wickedness of folly, even of foolishness and madness." Well, Solomon, you certainly tried everything. Everything under the sun. And you've proven everything to be vanity. You've said that over and over again now that you've lived your life. There's just some things I don't want to learn from my own experience. I'll learn from your experience. If it hurt you what you did, then I know I don't want to do that. So that's what Solomon is saying. I've tried everything under the sun. He tried wisdom and laughter and wine and women and song and buildings and wealth and power. Tried everything. He said, "Solomon, you tried to find out the reason of things. And you did that by engaging in what he says right here in the text. I engaged in folly, foolishness, and madness." Yeah. "And your conclusion is that the reason of things was far from me." Yeah. So you cannot find that which is far off because it's far off. So now Solomon warns us not to obsess about things we can't understand in this life. Some things we can't understand. "I don't know what the future holds, but I know who holds the future." It's the psalm that we sing. Remember Solomon's final words. Let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. He gets to that in chapter 12, the last verses. "Fear God, keep His commandments, for this is the whole of man. God will bring everything or every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be bad." Wow. That's his conclusion. So what I do not know about God's plan is balanced by what I know about Him. What I know. Put wisdom into practice. I tried to get the number seven. I tried to get Clarence to take this last section. But in his wisdom, he refused. Stop the lesson right here.
Pretty, yeah, that's wisdom.
That's wisdom. In verse 26. Well, the time's up.
Nice try.
Nice try. Here it is, verses 26 through 29. I find more bitter than death. Wow. The woman whose heart is snares and nets, whose hands are fetters. King James says bands. Might say handcuffs. He who pleases God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be trapped by her. Here's what I found, says the preacher, adding one thing to the other to find out the reason, which my soul still seeks, I cannot find. One man among a thousand I have found. But a woman among all these I've not found. Truly, this only I've found, that God made man upright. They've sought out many schemes. Well, Solomon never begins his sermon in Ecclesiastes 1, verse 13. I set my heart to seek and search out my wisdom concerning all that's done under heaven. So that was his goal. I'm going to try everything that's out there, and he did. Solomon wasn't wise in his choice of women. In 1 Kings 11:3, he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not loyal to the Lord his God. So now Solomon is speaking from personal experience. And having that experience, in this sense, he uses that phrase, is more bitter than death. Beware of the woman that has snares and fetters that takes you away from God. It says, he who pleases God escapes her. So if you please God, there's a sense in which Solomon is saying you are free from being tempted and you stay on God's side. Put wisdom into practice. Stay on God's side, you're free from being tempted or free from being overcome by temptation. No matter what it is. 2 Peter 2, verse 9 says, the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptation. So, truly, the last phrase, truly this only have I found. So now he reaches another conclusion in his search. That God made man upright. And that's right. And right at the beginning, with the creation of Adam and Eve, they were okay until committing the sin. Genesis 3, verse 3, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die. And they disobeyed. They were okay until then. So then Solomon says, God made man upright. Right. But they've sought out many schemes. Sin is something you commit, not something you were created with or born with. It's an action. It's a violation, a trespass. It's iniquity. Those words that the Bible uses. It's something you commit. So Solomon now is giving us the perspective and the strength to live on God's side. And I'll close with that. Put me in the, no, I didn't put this one. In James 3, verse 13. Who is wise and understanding among you? It's a question. Who's wise and understanding? Put wisdom into practice. Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in meekness and wisdom. There's the list. If you want to know anything about else about that woman, ask somebody else. Next week, Lord willing, I'm looking at chapter 8 coming up. 10 lessons already. but I'll do all of chapter 8, Lord willing, next Sunday evening. And in my own reading, I'm just thinking it's all about humility. And it gives you things that promote humility. And I think there, I looked about 5 or 6. I'm not sure how many. I'll break up the text for you. That Solomon distinguishes in chapter 8 things that will bring about humility in our life. So next week. Always at the close of a lesson, we sing a song of encouragement, song of invitation. You're not a member of the New Testament church. You're not a Christian. You haven't been baptized for remission of sins. You have that opportunity, and you know what that invitation is. Jesus, it's an invitation from Jesus. Come unto me, all ye that labor and heavy laden. I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. You shall find rest unto your souls. I'm meek and lowly in heart. It's an invitation from above. If you need to respond to that this evening, just come and let your request be known. Let's stand together. We'll sing the song that Dennis has for us.